is Sandy Shepherd, and welcome back to regular episode 9 of the Be a Bond Girl podcast. Today, notwithstanding what Kermit the Frog used to sing, we are going to discuss how it can be easy being green.
Relax, pull up a chair, and join us for the Be a Bond Girl podcast, featuring mastermind coach and author of Fempowerment, Unleashing Your Inner Bond Girl, Sandy Shepherd.
Hey, this is Sandy Shepherd, and welcome back to the BeABondGirl.com podcast. As you can tell, I am playing with the front end of this podcast after having some comments from the fabulous Sally Getch from the Podcast Asylum. You can also find her on author-izer.com. She's been helping me out with a lot of my podcasting issues, and since I am just a typical Bond girl, meaning I'm an ordinary woman trying to do something that's a little bit beyond me, I definitely want to have a shout out and call out to Sally Getch for helping me out. So that's why we've rearranged the front end of this podcast a little bit. Let me know what you think. You can always call our listener feedback line at 206-350-3537, or you can send me an email at doubleosandy, that's doubleosandy@yahoo.com. Sorry about that. So what's this podcast going to be about? Well, today we are going to talk about green living. Earth Day is coming up in a couple of weeks, but I've been thinking about this podcast for some time, just not really getting around to it. But I heard something on the news yesterday that really spurred me into action that I want to share with all of you. Here in California, farming, fishing, and ranching is big business. Yesterday on KCBS Radio, I heard a story about our king salmon. They're also called Chinook salmon. King salmon live in basically a 3-year cycle. They're born in the Sacramento River and its tributaries, and then they swim through the delta out to the San Francisco Bay until they reach the Pacific Ocean. They live here until they're 3 years old, fatten up. Then somehow after 3 years, they know to swim back up the river to spawn and then ultimately dive up there. And then their offspring live and do the same cycle, swim down to the delta and into the bay, out into the Pacific Ocean, live there for 3 years, come back up the river 3 years later to spawn. When conditions in either the ocean or the river are poor, then the salmon are in big trouble. Well, 5 years ago, the Bay Institute estimated there were about 800,000 salmon swimming back upstream. Last fall, this had dropped to barely 60,000. A lot think that it's a consequence of climate change in the ocean, but also record amounts of water were diverted from Northern California to Southern California taps. Basically, people get their drinking water from us that live in Southern California, and to the huge industrial farms that drain off the water from this river as well. So there's less water, not as good quality of water, because there's less water in the river, so obviously more silt and, you know, stuff like that. And there's also some problems in the ocean right now with having less of the krill and little shrimps and stuff that the salmon eat. Now, the Fisheries Council has stated that in the last 2 years, we've gone from record highs to record lows, and so few are forecasted this year to return that on Thursday, which is tomorrow for me, they're expected to shut down the entire catch. This is what prompted me to do this podcast, actually, because although this is going to mean financial devastation for hundreds of businesses that depend on salmon, I want to tell you a story of how this means financial devastation to friends and neighbors of mine. As some of you know, as I've spoken about in previous podcasts and I spoke about in my book, I realized and actualized a life dream back in 1999 when I was able to purchase my own small farm, about an acre, up in Sonoma County. Now, there's all sorts of stories around this, and when I bought it, it was really, believe it or not, a toxic waste dump, but when I purchased it, I was able to turn it within 3 years into an organic farm. I absolutely love my farm. I now rent it out to fantastic tenants. But my neighbors, who I'm going to call the Smiths here, are fisher people. They depend on the salmon. Now, those of you that live in cities or aren't out in the country may not actually know any farmers or fisher people. And so I want you to know the Smiths. You are now one step removed from them because you know me and I know them. What is shutting down the entire catch this year going to mean to the Smiths? Well, they rent their house and they're not going to be able to make their rent. John Smith can drive a tractor and do some odd jobs, and actually Jane Smith, let's call her his wife, can go back into doing what she had been doing, which is sort of secretarial type work, but she and John had actually purchased a fish processing plant, which was their lifelong dream. They put all of their money into it, and they were going to be not just fisher people, but they were absolutely going to move a step up, and they were going to do fish processing. They were committed to doing this in a clean and organic manner, and I got to tell you, a couple of years ago when they went into this venture, you've never seen people more excited to do this and help their community. The Smiths have two little boys. We'll call them John Jr. and Jack, and these boys are so cute. I absolutely adored them. John Jr., from the time that he was probably about 3 or 4 years old, would climb through the fence, come into my farm and right into my house with his dog, usually, and play with my cat. And since I ran my law firm from my home, sometimes he would just come into my office and there I'd be on the telephone on a conference call, and he'd wait very patiently until I was off, and then he'd want me to tell him a story and did I have any milk and cereal and stuff like that. I absolutely love this child, gotta tell you. His mother, of course, would call me every now and again, horrified that her son had once again snuck through the fence and come on over. He would bring me little pieces of fool's gold every once in a while that he'd dug up in the yard. He was always so excited when his dad would take him out fishing, and he would tell me about the fishing and the people that he'd met. Of course, he's getting up to do this like every fishing family or fisher person at like 3 or 4 in the morning, and then off he'd go to school and his dad would, you know, go off and take care of the fish. These are the real people that are behind the food that you put on your table. This is why in my last podcast, I strongly suggested setting up a ritual to thank the people that have brought that food to you. Now, if you're sitting down with a Mickey D's hamburger and styrofoam, there's still some people that are behind that. But how much more grateful could you be if you knew that the Smiths were behind that salmon that you're putting down on your table instead of some big agribusiness? So what does the closing of the catch mean to my neighbors, the Smiths? Unfortunately, because of the low fishing turnout, and we had some issues with our crab this year as well, they have lost their fish processing plant. And now that it looks like on Thursday they will not be able to fish, that means they are losing their entire livelihood. Looks like divorce, because there's so much stress in their lives. They never see each other. They're so whacked out because of worry about money. And I spoke with Mrs. Smith just recently, and she said that they're thinking about moving perhaps to Montana to try to make a new life there where rents are a little bit lower, and she's hoping that she can get a job and perhaps Mr. Smith could do some work working along the rivers there. But they're going to lose everything. The Smiths try to keep this from their boys because they want their boys to be happy and to have a happy childhood. But sometimes they are just fighting over money, or she's crying herself to sleep. And I recently was able to pick up John Jr. at school. I hadn't seen him in a couple of years since I got married and moved away from the farm, but he was going to a special school down here in my county, and I had the good fortune of finding out he needed a ride back home, and so I gave him that ride back home. I just love how little boys think. It was so much fun to have him in the car with me. Well, can they keep sending him to the school that's really helping him to read? No, because it's a private school. And he knew that this was going to be one of his last times at the school. And he is getting, I guess I would sort of say, kind of old for his years, in that he is now learning what it's like to be in real financial difficulties that don't have anything to do with how his parents ran their money or how they ran their household. It has everything to do with what we are all doing to our earth. He even explained that to me. In our ride back up to his house, which is right next to my ranch, he came up with some great ideas to sort of help save the earth. Now, I have had these ideas written in a back pocket for quite some time, but the latest news about the salmon made me remember my conversation with them. And this was at the point where his parents were losing the fish processing plant. I haven't spoken with him recently, and I'm not sure how that family is going to handle this latest devastating news. After I get this podcast out, I definitely am calling the Smiths and see how I can help them. But this podcast is about ideas, how you can help people like the Smiths in ways that are not going to drive you insane. I hope that I've come up with some ideas that I'll be telling to you. I've got a lot of ideas written here. Like I said, some of them came from John Jr. and a lot of them came from research. So this will be a little bit of a long podcast, but I hope that you learned something from it. And please give me a call or an email if you think of other ideas. Post them on the website under the comment section. So here we go. First, couple of statistics that I came across that are not very happy, but I thought that it was important to share these with you. The suicide rate for farmers and ranchers is 300% the national average in the United States. Now, in 1920, 80% of the money you spent went directly to the farmer, rancher, or fisherman that got that food to you. Now, it's less than 10%. Unfortunately, food has become big business, and the way we get food is actually a huge threat to the environment, too. Next time you buy apples, check out where those apples are coming from. Have they been trucked, flown, come to you by railroad train? Then all that gasoline was part of getting that one apple to you. Also with canned and boxed food, they are processed, packaged, and preserved. There are harvesters, conveyor belts, packing machines, industrial fertilizers, bug chemicals, and the like behind a lot of the food that you're putting into your mouth. Worse, with those industrial fertilizers and bug chemicals, all we get is stronger bugs attacking our food. And with the industrial agribusiness, I recently read that a lot of the food that we get from that business doesn't actually even have the nutrients in that food anymore. The example that I read about was spinach that's industrial processed. You know, we all used to watch Popeye and he would always eat his spinach to get his iron. Well, now they've been testing spinach from agribusiness and a lot of the spinach has no iron in it anymore. Why is that? Because the iron comes from the earth and the plants pull it out of the earth and into their leaves, which is how you get it. Unfortunately, because these agribusinesses are just using chemical fertilizer, chemical bug testing and the like, and not using what's called crop rotation, which means that they plant a crop that then feeds the soil, that then grows another plant in the next season that uses what's been put into the soil by the previous plant, which is what organic farmers do, the soil has been completely denuded of the minerals and vitamins that we need to get out of the plant. Even worse, the plant contains the chemicals that they're spraying on those plants. Of course it does. You can imagine. I mean, it's taking in water that's got the chemicals. It's taking in the plant food. And it can only make the leaves out of what it's being given as its building blocks. So if those big building blocks are chemical fertilizers and bug treatments, then that's what's going to go into that food. You might find that the price is a little higher if you are going to buy organic food, but the price to society and nature isn't factored into that price. Not only that, but as more people demand that we have more organic foods and less chemicals, prices have dropped. If you're eating a lot of processed or fast foods, look at those foods and realize how cheap they are. Just take a step back and let's take a hamburger from a fast food outlet. There's two buns on there. There's a burger on there. There's lettuce. There's tomatoes. There's condiments. And you're getting it all for like 99 cents. How could that possibly be? They are not factoring in all of the cost to society, all of the cost to nature. You know that you probably couldn't make that same burger organically for 99 cents. So what are they doing behind the scenes where they are able to make those products so inexpensively? About a week or two ago, I actually posted on my blog, and I'll try to remember to post again in these show notes, a video that talks about the whole manufacturing process. It's a little long, but it definitely reminds you about how companies make money and make things cheaper and also make things that will break. That was one of the things that after World War II, our government planned. It's called planned obsolescence. They actually planned for things to break because they realized they wanted to keep all the factories going that had been going during the war effort. And so they made it so that, number one, consumption was something that people could really be proud of. Back in our grandma's day, people used to be proud of being frugal. People used to be proud of not having to buy things. But if you watch this video, they discuss the history behind planned obsolescence, in other words, things breaking so that you'll have to buy new, and the idea of pushing for more consumption. One of the examples that they use was when, after 9/11, President Bush came on the television and radio. What did he tell us all to do? He didn't tell us to hunker down, to hug our family, to become more self-sufficient. No, he said, go out and buy more products. That's what he said. He did say buy American, but he said go out and buy. Make sure the economy is strong. Buy, buy, buy. Well, that's what's gotten us into a lot of trouble. All those things represent your energy. Not only do you have to exchange your money, which is energy, because you've gotten that money through your own effort, for those things that you're purchasing, but also you have to dust them and take care of them and make sure that they don't break and things like that. This is a little bit of a side issue, but you might want to go back and listen to my decluttering episodes in podcast 234 or so, and remember that as part of Earth Day, it's not just this new age frou-frou, go out and plant a tree. It's go inside your house and get rid of the stuff that you don't love or have an absolute use for. Let it get to its next best use on freecycle.org or through your church or through your temple or through other charities. You can take things that you have already and give them to people so that they don't have to buy them, so that they don't have to exchange their energy for things that are in your house, just basically gathering dust or that you're dusting or whatever. This is an amazing way to save energy, and that's all that Earth Day is about. Get those things out of your house that you don't love and adore or don't have a use for. Get them to somebody who will love them and use them right now. Let's say that you decide to get rid of 4 or 5 sets of sheets. They're in perfectly good condition, but you don't really need all the sheets you have in your house. You put them on freecycle.org. Somebody comes and picks them up. What does that mean? That means that those 4 sets of sheets that were packaged in plastic, that had cardboard in them, the whole 9 yards, they don't have to go through their manufacturing process now because that person that got them from you doesn't have to go and buy them. That's the sort of thing that we need to think about more and more, perhaps on Earth Day, but on every day, that everything that you can send to its next best use is something that does not have to go through the manufacturing process. We, at a grassroots level, are responsible for saving the world. I'm serious about that. Now, what are some other ideas? We're talking about food. One of the things that is very important is to try to buy local in season. The closer that the food comes from you, the better it is for you. That's because there's not the trucking and railway and airplane that gets it to you. So that little apple is tied up with all that gasoline as well. Now, for items like chocolate, coffee, and bananas, which probably don't grow anywhere near you, look for fair trade. African plantations growing cacao beans, which are made into chocolate, have been documented to use child slavery. We do not need to be eating the sorrow of other people. If you see organic, then that means it's been grown without pesticides. Fair trade means that the people that are growing it are getting a fair wage for their work. You might see shade grown. Commercial growers are growing coffee, usually where they just cut down the forest and they just plant the coffee, and they need to use more water and chemicals because the coffee is not growing in a shady habitat like the normal coffee plants do. Shade grown means that the commercial growers are growing the coffee in that more natural habitat where it has overhead plants that keep it cool, and this really helps the coffee to keep going without chemical fertilizers and without using a ton of water. You can also eat lower down the food chain. Hey, I love a good steak just like anybody else, but that steak means a cow that had to be raised, that had to go through a slaughterhouse process, that drank water and ate wheat and probably received inoculations, all that sort of stuff. Now, if I were just to, let's say, eat something that was made out of the 100% whole grain that that cow ate, all of the energy from that grain goes directly into me. We don't have the cow eating tons of grain and then me getting the benefit of the grain or the grass from the cow. So it's just something to think about. But again, the closer that you eat down the food chain, the less energy it takes to make that food that's going into your mouth. Now, if you can't eat totally organic, at least eat these fruits and vegetables organic if you're going to eat them at all. The FDA and EPA data states that the following fruits and vegetables are the most contaminated and toxic ones, and tests on humans show that these toxins stay in you. So at least these specific items, please consider purchasing organic. They are strawberries, that's number one most toxic, bell peppers from the U.S. and Mexico, spinach, cherries from the U.S., peaches, cantaloupe from Mexico, celery, apples, apricots, green beans, grapes from Chile, and cucumbers. While we're on food, you also want to think about packaging. Go for bulk food where you can. Most stores now have bulk pasta, they have bulk flour, they have bulk sugar, and you can just purchase only as much as you actually need, so it'll even be fresher than if you bought that whole box and kept it in your pantry. And you will not have to worry about all the packaging that you're throwing away. In fact, if you use one of the plastic bags that they normally have that you can put the pasta in, or the flour, or the apricots, or the nuts, or the cereal, or granola, or whatever it is that you're purchasing, just keep those. Don't throw them away. And bring them back and use it again. Then you have had no packaging that you're having to worry about. Another thing you want to try to cut down on is things like paper towels. And in fact, Dr. Oz, in his most recent book, one of his most recent You books, you probably know him as the doctor from the Oprah Show, suggests that when it comes to things also like sponges, paper towels, and the like, that what you do is you keep a bunch of rags. These are good rags. We actually purchased some from Costco, which is our local warehouse store, just a bunch of white rags that you keep in a bucket under your sink. And every time you have to clean up a spill or clean things, you clean it up with that rag and then you put it into a second bucket. At the end of the week, when you do your laundry, you put these through the laundry and clean them. And then you are not using all the paper towels, and you also are not using the sponges and the brushes and scrubbers that we often all use, and that just collect bacteria. If you can't get rid of the sponges and brushes altogether, make sure you put them through your dishwasher. The thing that's interesting about dishwashers, in fact, is they actually use less energy than if you do dishes in the sink. So definitely use your dishwasher instead of just washing your plates and cups and knives and forks, but make sure that you use it efficiently. You want to put it on its lowest use cycle. Don't use the dry cycle. When it's all done, just open it up. It'll dry by itself. And make sure that you pack it correctly. Don't run it when it's only half full. Another thing to consider is to microwave in glass containers instead of using plastic wrap and all the rest of the stuff that we use. Also, storing things in the fridge, you can just as easily store them in glass containers as to put foil on the top. That foil and that plastic is a one-use thing, and that is wasting energy. You do know that plastic is a petroleum product, right? I am not so sure that putting a petroleum product on top of food and then heating it up in a microwave is such a great idea. I believe that Drs. Oz and Roizen talked about this too in their book. I certainly know that I saw them on Oprah once talking about not using plastic in microwaves because of the toxins that are released. Also, aluminum foil or tin foil, that started out as aluminum or tin. That was mined out of a mine somewhere that's taking big gouges out of the earth, so that you're using foil that you're going to wrap something up and put in the fridge. How about getting some glass containers just like your grandma used to use? Or if all else fails, just put the food in a bowl and put a plate on top. That's going to be just as good, and you are not gouging out the earth to get that tin foil that you're just going to be throwing away anyway. While we're in the fridge, I'm going to talk a little bit about energy later, but if you cover all the food in your fridge, the humidity will go down, and so it will take less time to cool things. You also want to make sure you let things cool off before they go into the fridge. Otherwise, you're just cooling them down with the energy from the fridge when you could be leaving them out on the counter to cool down themselves. Another trick is that when you're going to cook food, you want to take it out of the fridge earlier, especially meat. All the good chefs talk about this on the Food Channel. You need to bring food up to room temperature before you cook it, because otherwise the inside of that food is still cold while the outside is warming up in the pan, and you are using energy just to warm it up while you could have had it sitting on your counter. So use this to your advantage. I've said this before and I'll say it again. You also want to fill your fridge and your freezer with bottles of water, gallon bottles of water. If there's ever an emergency, you will have water to drink, but these will keep the fridge and the freezer cooler because the water will hold the cold and you will not need to take energy constantly to cool down the fridge. The water and the ice in the fridge will do that for you. Lastly, one of the things that I really suggest is that when the clocks change, you need to, number one, change the batteries and all your smoke detectors, so that's twice a year, but also pull your fridge away from the wall and clean the gunk out of the coils behind the fridge. All that gunk is costing you energy and money because the electricity has to push its way through all that gunk to get into the fridge. Any appliance, this also goes for like dryers and the vents in dryers, the vents in your heating system. Oh my goodness, that's a big one. Air conditioning systems, all that sort of thing. Make sure you clean the filters. The more gunk you have in those filters, the more energy it's taking to push that hot or cold through to the appliance. And you are paying for that electricity, and we as a world are paying for that electricity by expending the resources that we need to expend to get that electricity to you. You know, speaking about HVAC systems, another thing you can do to save energy is to close the vents to rooms that you don't use that much. And if your house has an automatic thermostat, learn to use it. I tell you, I downloaded directions from the internet for ours, and now the house is warm when we get up and cools down when we're at work and then warms up before we get home. It's great, and it saves a lot of money than just leaving on a constant temperature. We also have installed ceiling fans in our home, all over the home, and this helps us to circulate the AC and the heat when we do use it. This is important because the heat will just rise, the AC will just sink, and you'll be using more and more of your HVAC system to try to push out that air conditioning or that heating to warm up or cool down the room. If you have a fan, it actually circulates the air and it warms it up or cools it down better. Sometimes we can just run the fan with a couple of windows open and it sucks all the heat out of the house during the summer. We don't even have to use the air conditioning at all. So that's another thing to consider, because air conditioning does use a lot of electricity. We all know that. What else can you do on the energy side? Well, you can actually switch to green power in nearly 20 states and in Washington, D.C. If you go to www.green-e.org, you can tell your electric company that you want your bill, your electricity, to come from renewable or sustainable resources. The more people that vote this way, the more they are going to build things like solar power and wind power and stuff like that, the less we will be depending on toxic sources for our electricity. You can also visit the Department of Energy's Green Power Network at www.eren.doe.gov/greenpower. Other tricks include using rechargeable batteries instead of throwing those batteries out. Those little batteries are toxic. You can't even throw batteries away in your regular trash. Now that should tell you something. Also, I'm sure you've seen those curly light bulbs that they have for sale now. They're actually pretty cheap. They used to be very expensive. Those last for so much longer than regular light bulbs that though, even though they're a little bit more expensive than a regular light bulb, you might not change that light bulb for another year. And they use a ton less power. What other things can you do? Well, You can turn your computer off. By suspending your computer, it's still using electricity. We talked a little bit about using the energy saver switch on all your appliances, but take a look at things like your TV, your computer, anything that you might be able to plug into, say, a power strip, and then just turn the strip off. Then that electricity is not running to that TV or your computer or whatever. Now, I understand that maybe your DVD or VCR or clocks will be flashing 12 if you do that. But if that bothers you and you want to save more energy, maybe you need to just put some duct tape over the flashing 12. I'm kidding. But I want you to really look around your house and see how you can make a difference. One of the things that you can do, and one of the things that John Jr. recommended to me in our car chat, was to make a game of this, to ask your family to help you, to treat them, to educate them about things like electricity and where it comes from and how we can get rid of it, how we can stop using so much electricity and food, and take them to the farmers market, introduce them to some of the farmers, let them buy some of their favorite fruits and vegetables. Get your family involved. It's so important that everyone understands why they're making what they might perceive to be a sacrifice. Make sure that they understand that they are changing the world, just them themselves. That's great education, too. Everyone should know that they can change the world. And we all know that the best way to do this is to share with them, share ideas, share stories, go on the internet. Meet a farmer. Don't just tell them that they have to do such and such or they can't do so and so. Share with them and make it part of the process. Make it part of their lives that they will carry forward. Now, what else can we do to save energy? I know we're up to about half an hour worth of podcast now, which is a long podcast, but I have a lot to say, so bear with me. I was thinking about communication systems. I've talked about this before. I think that you need to save your energy. That's part of Earth Day. Think of all of this as saving energy. The less energy that's expended, the less load it's going to be on the Earth. And that's what we're aiming for. So, what about letting all your calls go to voicemail and then answering them at a predetermined time, or the same with email, putting a dot sig on your email that states that you'll be answering them a couple of times a day and then sticking to that. Yes, my BFF and I only communicate by emails and texting sometimes too, but if you flag items and handle them just once and just get your voicemails once, you get to save energy and you get to do things on your time. Now, what do I mean about flagging items? I happen to use Outlook, and in Outlook, if you click on it, if you right-click on an email, you'll see that there's all different colored flags that you can use to flag that email. I think I've talked about this in a podcast before, but what I do is that I flag emails with red that need to be handled right away, with blue that are sort of B priorities. I flag with orange because that's my favorite color. Jokes and texts and emails and stuff that come from my friends, so that when I take an hour at 3:30 and have a cup of tea, I read through my orange emails all at once, answer them, and I just feel great. And I know that I'm having that as a special perk at 3:30 for doing my red and blue stuff. You probably have ways to flag and systematize things yourself. The most important thing is just to do it. Think of it as an Earth Day exercise. Save your energy, save running around, save your sanity by blocking in time to meditate, blocking in time to just do email at a certain time or just do voicemail at a certain time. And don't get derailed from that. You don't have to do everything all at once, but this is a great way to start forward on saving energy, which will, honest to goodness, save the world. I'm not sure if you saw it, but I was recently on View from the Bay. It's a TV show here in the San Francisco Bay Area that comes on the hour before Oprah. And we talked a little bit about laundry tricks. Those are on my mind as energy saving tricks too. Remember, you want to teach people to be responsible in your family for what they're doing. One of my tricks that I mentioned on View from the Bay is to keep a pre-treater stain stick in like a cup holder on your hamper where laundry goes. And whoever puts laundry into that laundry hamper has got to pre-treat that item and zip up the zippers. Yes, your kids are going to hate this, but otherwise you're doing it. And what happens? Of course, it's Murphy's Law. You throw your daughter's favorite shirt into the dryer that you missed a little stain on, comes out, it's set in, and now she's blaming you for ruining her favorite shirt and saying you have to buy another one. Nope. This way, you make it, you mark it. It is your responsibility if you are the person that's putting that laundry in the hamper. I also keep stain stickers that I got from my dry cleaner, which is a green dry cleaner. You can find out more about this if you go to the View from the Bay link that I have in my website, in the podcast part of my website. And get those stain stickers and give them to anybody who has dry cleaning in your house, your husband, whatever, so that when the dry clean item comes off, you just put that stain sticker right on the item, and you, as the person bringing it to the laundry, or whoever brings it to the laundry, is not responsible for having to search through and spend a half an hour going through everybody else's dry cleaning to find out if there's any stains. The stickers are already on there. What's that do? It saves time and energy for the person that is taking the stuff to the dry cleaner. What about the pre-treater? That saves energy from your washer. If you put items into your washing machine that are pre-treated, then you can switch to cold water settings for all your clothes. Your clothes will be clean. You'll be using less detergent, and you'll be using less energy to heat up that water. You also want to experiment using less detergent than is recommended on the side of the box. See how it goes. Usually, what are they trying to do? They're trying to sell more detergent. Try putting in half and see if your clothes come out okay. If they do, hey, you've just saved half the money. You've saved 50% of the money. That box is going to last you twice as long. Run only full loads. Use the pre-treater. Use the cold water settings. And you probably want to check to switching to earth-friendly soaps and detergents. Myself, I use Castile soaps. The primary fat, all soaps are basically fat plus a base, is olive oil, and it's very, very mild. You want to check for phosphates in your detergents and your soaps. Many soaps that are sold today are just hard detergents. I mean, basically, they're just like putting a detergent on your skin. That's not what our grandmas used to do. I keep coming back to the grandma example, but it's so instructive. I'm not going to say that the government and big business is out to get us, but they definitely have it in their best interest to make us buy more stuff so that they can make more stuff. Time to start really thinking about that. Let's see. We were in the sort of laundry room and bathroom. Another thing that you might want to consider, that here in California, I think most of us do, we've gone through a couple of droughts, but don't let the water run when you're brushing your teeth or doing dishes, stuff like that. Just put your toothbrush underneath the water, turn the water off, brush your teeth for the 2 minutes you're supposed to do it. It's such a long time. And then go ahead and turn the water back on. It is amazing how much water folks use a day. I think I read it was something crazy, like 8 to 10 gallons. Maybe it was even more. I probably have that wrong because it sounds like not very much water. But just in sort of running water, water that we waste every day, it's something like 8 to 10 gallons of wasted water every day per person. Now, if you know the actual number of that, please write me a comment, because I'm pulling that out of the back of my mind. And it's probably actually more, thinking about it. Another thing that you should consider is you can use less water with every flush in your toilet by taking a 1 gallon pop bottle and filling it up with water and putting it in the back of your toilet tank. Again, it's filled with water. This will displace enough water to save a gallon each time you flush. old toilets use 7 gallons per flush. See, so I must be wrong with that 8 to 10 gallons of wasted water. It's probably like 80. It's something, probably something completely insane. Let me know. But I do have something here from the internet that says that old toilets use 7 gallons to flush. The new low flow ones use only about 1 to 1.5 gallons to flush. But if you can displace with a 1 gallon pop bottle, if you can put that in the back of your toilet, and or you can put rocks in there or bricks or anything that brings the water level up, you will be able to save that much water every time you flush. So what else can you do? I've talked before about, I guess, what I should call low earth impact gifting. What does that mean? That means re-gifting things that you have in your house that somebody else would love, or giving things like certificates to the movies or massages or restaurants. Or, you know, you can even donate in someone's name to great charities. You might have a charity that you love, but one that I think is so unbelievable is kiva.org, K-I-V-A.org. Check it out. It makes loans to folks that are trying to make it. And if you give money to Kiva, you can then tell your recipient that they get to go and choose the people that they want to support. How great would that be? We've talked a lot, too, about just buying, I guess what I would say, just buying what you need, not what you can't live without. If you say you can't live without something, then I will tell you that I think that you are buying emotionally and probably trying to fill a void. Just buy what you need. It's like making a shopping list. If you're making a shopping list and going to the grocery store, you're not purchasing little items that you happen to see on the side. You just buy what you need. We've got an economic crisis going on. We all know that. We also all know that we've got plenty of stuff. Since that's the case, let's have lower impact. Just buy what you need, not what you, quote unquote, can't live without. Also, go the extra mile and get the safest thing of whatever it is that you need for the environment. Make sure you're reading the boxes. Look at the packaging. Is it recycled packaging? If you need something, go that extra mile and figure out which one was produced in a way that's best for our environment. You know, I talked at the beginning of this podcast about the family that I used to live next to, and John Jr., who used to crawl through the fence to come and visit me at my house. Honestly, when I did purchase that house, I bought it as is out of a probate sale, and there really was a toxic dump on the property. It was unbelievable. I had to do all kinds of matter to clear it up. Now, like I said, now it's an organic farm, but every time I'd see him climbing through that fence, especially when he would climb over that big hill made out of paint cans and tar and, oh my goodness, that was between his mom's house and my house, which is now a rose bed, mind you, of organic roses. But I would think, man, kids live so close to the ground. They live so close to all the chemicals and toxins. And I would see him putting his hands on the ground and, you know, all sorts of stuff. That, honestly, to tell you the truth, that spurred me more than anything else to clean up that place. I'm sure you feel the same about your kids. Would you eat an apple that sat in Mr. Clean? Even if you washed it off, wouldn't you have that in the back of your mind that Mr. Clean was on it, or, you know, something else that has really toxic warnings on the back? I have a website that I don't make a lot of money off of. It's called mooncrafting.com. Why I set it up is I wanted to get the wholesale rate on a lot of organic cleaners and vitamin products, stuff like that. If you go to that website, again, it's mooncrafting.com, there's a cleaner that's called Thieves Cleaner. That's what I use now. It is non-toxic. It's actually made out of all natural ingredients, and it cleans like a charm. Rates of asthma, learning issues, and cancer in children is way up. Leukemia and brain tumors are up the highest. Kids put things in their mouths. Kids put their hands in their mouths. They put them on our floors, on our counters. I think we have to take better care and pay better attention to what we are cleaning with. Go to your place where you keep your cleaners now and just go into the sink, wherever they are, turn them all around. How many of them say that they're toxic if you swallow them? Well, you're swallowing a little tiny bit of them every single day that you put things down on your counters and stuff. You know, in fact, that's a great Earth Day exercise. Look around your house for all the toxics. Have your family help you. Round them all up. Old paint cans, pesticides, Mr. Clean. And take a look. Read the back. Now, for the stuff that's like old paint cans and stuff, get them to the hazardous waste collection site. Again, you can't just throw the stuff away. That should tell you something. If you have a lot of them and it represents a lot of money, then okay, use them up. But later, I want you to consider choosing less toxic alternatives. I have that Thieves Cleaner on my site. That's what I use. But at regular stores, you can buy things like Seventh Generation, BioClean, Citrusol, Bonami. These are all less toxic. You know, what did your grandma use? Again, we're back to grandma. If you think of her house, when I think of my grandparents' houses, they were spotless. And I remember my one grandma, she'd use white vinegar as a grease cutter that probably cost her 10 cents instead of the grease cutter solvent in the beautiful container from the store that's going to cost like 10 bucks. Bonami cleanser has been around forever. I remember she used it, and it has something in it like feldspar. Again, I might be making this up, but I'm pretty sure that that's what it has as a cleaner in it. It keeps surfaces totally clean, and it's non-toxic. Hey, baking soda can do the same thing. One of the worst things you can have is drain cleaner, and you actually can use baking soda followed by vinegar if you haven't used a chlorine drain cleaner recently, because that will make toxic fumes, and then follow it up with water, and that will break up the gunk in there as well. You can find a lot of these remedies on the internet, and they're not that difficult. And again, why are we using all these toxins? Now, when it comes to pests, you can use things like hot pepper oil or borax and vinegar, and that can help you to clean up ants and roaches and stuff like that. In fact, roaches hate borax or boric acid. That's what your grandma used to put out to make it so that roaches wouldn't be around the house. Ants need to follow their trail into your house. So if you wipe vinegar across that trail, they can't smell that trail and they can't follow it. Now, everyone thinks that moths just sort of eat clothes, but in reality, what they eat is food stains and dried sweat and other residue that are in those clothes. So if you be sure all your clothes are clean before you hang and store them, and then store them with cedar chips, moths hate cedar chips. Now, when it comes to dry cleaning, which I certainly talked about on that View from the Bay show, dry cleaning is incredibly toxic. The clothes that you drop off are doused in perchloroethylene, which is a chemical solvent linked to cancer. It's called dry cleaning because it's dipped in this perchloroethylene, which is not water, so that's why it's called quote-unquote dry cleaning. You need to look for a green cleaner instead. I use a green cleaner that not only takes back the hangers and all the bags and stuff like that, but it uses an environmentally friendly process. In Dr. Oz and Roizen's latest book, they talk about how toxic dry cleaning is, and they suggest that when you bring dry cleaning home, if it's done at a regular non-green dry cleaner, you have to strip those clothes out of the bag and leave them hanging outside for at least a day to get the chemicals that are in them to kind of waft out of the clothing. That is scary. We're wearing those clothes every day. That's the sort of stuff that we are doing to ourselves that we need to really think about and make a change. You know, I'm almost up to an hour and I've got like so many more tips I could give you. But at least these are a start. I've got a whole bunch of tips for outside, including things like mulching your plants, because if you put mulch around your plants, which can even just be shredded newspaper, and then you have drip irrigation underneath it, it will stop the water from evaporating, and that means you'll have to use less water. I have notes on green credit cards, green mutual funds. That's another thing you want to keep in the back of your mind. If you have a 401k or you're investing in things, you can actually get what's called a green mutual fund instead of the one that you're using right now, which just invests in, oh, say, companies like Patagonia that are committed to recycling, or companies that don't make any military or gun type things. You can find this stuff out. So that may be a little bit more than what you want to do right now, but don't forget, by putting that money in your 401k, you are funding whatever that mutual fund is funding. So if you'd like to make just a little bit more effort, or if you happen to have a financial advisor, heck, make them earn their money. Get them to invest in or in some of these more green mutual funds for you, or mutual funds that support the way that you think. I know I've given you a lot of things to think about. I hope that none of them is something like what I consider planting a tree. I'd love to plant a tree on Earth Day, but it's going to take a lot of time and effort that I don't have. It's a great gesture. I love it, but it's not going to happen. So instead, I'm going to do the things that I've talked about in this podcast. The other thing that I'm going to do, and I've harped on with my decluttering, is all the extra stuff that we have sucks your time and energy and finances away from small things like the metal dry cleaning hangers that you use and tangle up in your closets, to the stained dish towels that we still hang and use in the kitchen, to big things like the fact that we really all have about 30% excess stuff just bulging out of our closets and storage spaces. Saving energy means saving your own energy too, and that can affect the planet. I would love to hear from you about small changes that you've made that have made a big difference, or I'd love to hear stories about those of you who might have taken some of your too much stuff and given them away to others, or given them away to nonprofits, and how it made you feel. I would really, really love to hear from you, because this is something I am incredibly passionate about, and you can hear me talk about it all the time. But if you would just pick up the phone at 206-350-3537 and just let me know what you've done in this vein, I would be so grateful. I really would love to have a follow-on podcast where I talk a little bit more about this, since we're already up to about an hour and had nothing to say about any of this, did I? And I would love to share any tips that you might have, but also how doing some of the things that are in the book have made you feel. This, I think, would be so instructive for my listeners. And I know there's guys out there. I hope that there's Bond girls out there. Don't worry, if you're a guy and you want to call into my listener feedback line, we love you. Please just call. I really want to share some of these ideas with the rest of my listeners. And you guys give me such inspiration and great feedback. I've gotten some great emails, but I've gotten only a few listener calls, and I love getting them. I love the ability of being able to share that with other people that are out there. So please do call 206-350-3537. I would really like to do another podcast, maybe even next week, that'll still be before Earth Day, where I can share some of the tricks that you might have learned either from my book or from things that your family does, or just share your feelings about giving things away or Earth Day, stuff like that. And then I can rope those into the next podcast. I've got a lot more to say about this subject, but it's really more along the lines of serving your purpose and choosing your obligations wisely. So I can save that for another podcast. Now you've got some tips to try out, and I really, really look forward to hearing from you. If you don't want to use your real name, then use your Bond girl name. Or if you're a man calling in, you can certainly always call yourself James. I hope you guys have a wonderful week. I look so forward to hearing from you, and I can't wait to meet you here again. Bye.
Bond Girl is neither affiliated with nor endorsed by Eon Productions, Sony Pictures Entertainment, MGM Studios, or United Artists. This podcast is copyright 2008 by 00 Productions, all rights reserved. Fempowerment and Fempower are registered trademarks of 00 Productions. For more information, visit BeABondGirl.com. Our goal? To build a better world, one Bond Girl at a time.